Good morning. Today is Wednesday, January 19th, 2011. It is 9:30 a.m. and the City Council will come to order. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning.
Can you please call the roll?
Fritz. Fish.
Here.
Saltzman. Leonard.
Here.
Adams.
Here. A quorum is present. We shall proceed. Beginning with communications, can you please read the title for item number 62?
Excuse me, Carla.
Your monitors aren't on.
Where's the button?
Oh, they just turned them off.
Item 62, request of Barry Joe Stahl to address council regarding an introduction to Paris L. Collins.
Morning, Barry Joe. Welcome back.
Good morning, council. Mayor, I have a bunch of materials relating to my last appearance before you all that I didn't get to Carla. I do have a disability and I'm sick. I just wanted to point out that this scanned document appears in the email like that because they couldn't recognize as a woman with this terrible condition that I you have plenty of information about. I just want to draw your attention to a couple things real quick. The Nikkei Legacy Center has an exhibit that's open until May 30th called Taken FBI. It talks about how 118 individuals here in Portland, the Japanese-American community, were rounded up by the FBI just hours after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. So, yeah, we have a long history of secret lists. I also want to draw your attention to this newspaper, Portland Police Report. And these folks here on the cover of the Willamette Week, these medical marijuana folks. I've done some teaching with them. I'm an expert on the history of cannabis hemp, so when they do their presentations, I do some stuff with them. And I was able to have some refuge at their place this summer. And one of the things I could tell you about this room here is it needs to be cooled down. And what we know is if we suck out the hottest air in the room, it's by definition replaced by something cooler. So if you take the most qualified people in the social justice community out of business, we could look at Martin King here, they're replaced by the second string. So I have my great book of hemp. I'm in the introduction here, and I was given credit. You can look that up on Amazon. These pages are here. But I hate to read you guys. So, but what it does say, the emergence of marijuana use in the late 60s and 1970s sparked a deluge of research on all aspects of the hemp plant. The history of hemp clothing and paper merited a chapter or two in books largely concerned with marijuana by Ernest Abel, Alan Haney, and Benjamin Cutsfield. By the mid-1980s, researchers Gatewold Galbraith, Barry Stahl, Jack Fraser, and Jack Herer were focusing their efforts on the other uses of the hemp plant. I'm the Barry Stahl. My research was illegally destroyed this century by this corrupt government in our city. I'm sick of it. You should be sick of it, too. So one of the issues here is that painkillers started a road to addiction because opiates cause people to get addicted to really dangerous drugs, and literally thousands of people die from it. So this is information I'm giving to you all. Along with this, is you've already had this mayor for months, and you haven't taken action on my request to have Judge Edward Jones get a police report for his criminal misconduct. So I'm sharing this with the rest of council, and maybe they'll be able to hold your feet to the fire. I mean that only metaphorically, of course. And thank you so much. I was over 40 seconds last time, and I'm out of here. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Can you please read the title for communications, item number 63?
Request of Mike O'Callaghan to address council regarding attack on Bruno.
Good morning, Mr. O'Callaghan. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to address you again on the issue of shelterlessness. Again, I'm living at the start of Springwater Trail Corridor in a structure that I built. Got a couple of neighbors around me. On January 7th, about 11 p.m., my neighbor Bruno was attacked, okay, beaten severely, pool of blood about like this, okay, goes to the hospital, 3 days in the hospital, 4 police show up, crime lab shows up, take pictures. A week later, three detectives come by. A lot of cost in this, okay? We are not safe. How would you like to go out and see a pool of blood by your neighbor's house? Would you feel comfortable? They came back a week later and said, hey, if you wouldn't have had that dog, you'd be dead now. You feel safe? No. We want to be safe. Okay? We want to be able to be inside a fence. We want to be warm, dry, and secure. Food, shelter, clothing. Shelter. No shelter. Okay? Your laws stop us. Okay? They run us off when we get on property, when we want to group together. Okay? Enough on that. Anyway, homeless survey. I've been asking people if they've ever been surveyed that are homeless. Haven't found one yet. I'm only up to about 15 people, though. Don't think your homeless survey catches the homeless, okay? And I want to reiterate, please, we need protection, okay? Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Can you please read the title for item number 64?
Request of Wade A. Varner to address council regarding homeless services.
Hi, welcome.
Good morning, Mayor Commissioners. My name is Wade Varner. I'm a member of the Homeless Against Homelessness in America, or HAHA as we like to call it. I'm here to talk to you about the fact that we have not got a wet shelter or a 24-hour shelter in this town. People are dying in the cold. Being homeless should not be a death sentence. Being mentally ill should not be a death sentence. Being drunk, stupid, or stoned should not be a death sentence. And lately, they have been death sentences. We need to get a place where people can go, no matter what they are, if they have animals. My life without him would probably not, we wouldn't be talking. He saved my life once, and he's also been my constant companion. And to try to tell somebody that they cannot have their animal with them, and they have to sleep outside, and then tell them they can't sleep. I was looking at the Human Rights Convention. What we do to the homeless in this is a human rights violation. By moving them, by the constant threat of police and arrest, by not allowing them to sleep, by not allowing them to have a place to go. Everybody in the city talks about how they want to help the homeless, and I give you props. I mean, you guys have done tons. The mental health thing, the rack's going to be open. But until the rack's open, it was 32 degrees outside at midnight last night. And there's people out there, too. We just had somebody die of this. We had somebody die of the mental health. We have the mental health thing opening in a year or two. Everything's a year or two down the road. What we need to do is we need to have the money, find the money. You know, even if you have to go on and ask the people of Portland, we give for everything. We've given millions for the homeless in Haiti and every place else. People are in this town are hurting and dying. They need to have one place where you can go with no questions asked. I believe that the wet shelter, they have it for women. You know, nobody is turned away there. We need to have people. There's 16 beds over at the Hooper Detox Center that's not fully funded. I mean, those are the kind of things that we have to fund now till we get these organizations that we're working on. Everything's a year or two down the road, but people are dying on the streets right now. And that's the most important part. Like I said, being drunk, stupid, or stoned should not be a death sentence. Being mentally ill should not be a death sentence. Being homeless should not be a death sentence. And yet we've had four deaths in 2 months of those things. I know y'all are working on it. I'm not going to hammer on you about it, but we have to find the money. Go on, state of emergency. Have a tent city. We have tent cities in thing. I've sent you guys emails about what they're doing in other cities, getting the 50 most egregious people in L.A., no matter what they are. But we have to start doing those, and we have to find the money to do those, or because people are dying. That's all I'm asking. Please, find the money. We find the money to pay off people that have been misused. The downtown clean and safe, the safe part of it, they're harassing people for standing under awnings, telling them they have to move along under an awning and under their own rules. That's illegal, too. They've been doing this. I've caught them on camera. I've showed them the videotape of them, of these people actually calling people poor white trash and stuff. I mean, it's horrible. This has to be taken and getting under control.
Thanks for your testimony, sir. Can you please read the item for Communications 65?
Request of Leo Rhodes to address council regarding homeless and working together.
Mr. Rhodes? All right, that gets us to the consent agenda. Items number 73 and 75 have been pulled. Are there any other items that anyone wishes to pull? All right. Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have a 9:30 time certain resolution. Please read item number 66.
Recognize mentoring organizations funded by the Portland Children's Levy.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to acknowledge the great work of mentoring organizations, particularly those funded by the Portland Children's Levy, as part of National Mentoring Month. As you know, mentoring is an integral part of the Portland Children's Levy, which was created by city voters in 2002 and overwhelmingly renewed in 2008. It's one of our four key investment areas. The Children's Levy to date has invested $11 million specifically in mentoring programs from 2004 to 2000, well, from 2004 through 2012. Many of these programs are designed to reach students who are hard to reach. They are at risk of being disengaged. They are at risk of not graduating or staying in school. And we know that mentors can and do make a difference and having a positive impact on children, specifically children in foster care. So to tell you more about the Children's Levy's mentoring programs, we have a short presentation from our director of the Children's Levy, Lisa Pellegrino, and then we have an invited panel. Oh, I guess they're coming up too. I'll introduce our invited panel too. Very distinguished mentoring experts. We have Carolyn Besick, Executive Director of Oregon Mentors, and Duncan Campbell, who is the founder of the Friends of the Children. Is Farida Haran here also?
Yeah, she's here.
Want to come on up as well? Grab another chair and we'll...
I'll only be a minute, so she could have my chair if you want.
Oh, we'll get another chair over there. And Farida is from Lutheran Community Services, Northwest. Welcome. Okay, Lisa.
Okay, I'm just going to give you a brief outline of what we've done with mentoring programs over the last few years. So first of all, total over time, from the first levy through this current levy, we've invested $11 million in mentoring programs. And this year, so just this past fiscal year that just finished, we served 2,100 children. We serve students in all of the school districts that are in Portland. And right now, we're funding 10 both school-based and community-based mentoring programs, some of which are focused on specific populations that, for those of you who are familiar with the Achievement Gap, have experienced the Achievement Gap. Last, in our mentoring programs, we track outcomes, various types of outcomes, and kids who participate in mentoring programs show fewer behavior problems in school that result in suspensions and expulsions, as well as show improved positive social behaviors, which are some of the main aims of mentoring programs. So this next slide is just a map that shows you the location of the mentoring programs, including the schools where the school-based programs are located. So you can see they kind of go across the whole city. And last, I'll just give you a few words about the programs that we fund. We fund Big Brothers Big Sisters, which many people are familiar with, and we fund them to provide both community-based mentoring and school-based mentoring programs in the city. We fund Friends of the Children, which I will allow Duncan to tell you about. I won't go into details on that. We fund Impact Northwest to do mentoring programming in schools, and then program moves kids out into community-based matches. We fund ERCO, which is the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, provide services, mentoring services to African immigrant youth, which is a high-need community. We fund Metropolitan Family Services Experience Corps Program, and I believe we've got some folks here to talk about that as well, which brings mentors who are retired into the schools to do tutoring and mentoring. We fund the Portland Opportunities Industrialization Center, which provides school-based mentoring for the kids who attend the Rosemary Anderson High School, which is an alternative school in PPS. We fund SMART, which is a literacy mentoring program that fans out across the city and provides volunteer readers to kids. And we fund Trillium Family Services to provide a mentoring program for younger kids, focused specifically on recruiting people through the faith community and getting families to mentor kids. So that kind of gives you a sense of the range of the programs, and I'll let the specific folks who are here talk a little bit more about them.
Why don't we start with you, Duncan Campbell?
Good. Once again, I'm Duncan Campbell. I'm the founder of Friends of the Children, which is an intensive mentoring program. And we actually start with children at the end of kindergarten, and then we stay with those children all the way through high school. And these are the most challenged, difficult children in the school system. And for most of you, you're probably well aware that I have a passion about mentoring. I grew up in North Portland. My parents were a welfare family. My parents lived in bars. My father was in prison twice, and you can recognize why I have such a passion about mentoring and the need for mentoring. So that's on a personal basis. But on a community basis, the whole point is, what do we do about children in similar circumstances? And that's the power that's in the Children's Investment Fund. One of the great achievements, I think, of the last decade in Portland was actually the Children's Levy, because what it did is it took resources for one of the first times and focused on programs that make real change, that really work. It shifted funding away from traditional funding sources for this one reason. What you did is you set two criteria. The first criteria is the programs had to have real outcomes. They couldn't talk about making change for children. They had to really make change for children. But then you held all the programs accountable. You said that it had to be evidence-based in order to continue to receive funding. That is a standard that is at the leading edge of change in our community. And that's what the Children's Investment Fund did. And we thank you for that. And but how did it really do this? So let's just take a concrete example. If Friends of the Children were with these children for 12 years. So what did we do during those 12 years? These are children that at the end, 92% of them stayed out of the juvenile justice system. And their cohort group would have been about, that would have only been 30%. Over 80% of these children graduated from high school. Almost nobody expected these children to get out of grade school, let alone high school. And over 96% of them did not become early parents. And once again, that cohort group would be in the 30 to 40% range. Those are real outcomes. That's real change. That really works. But that's because of the Children's Investment Fund. So I thank you for that, and then I want to encourage you for that. And then one last thing is, it's an investment fund, right? So for Harvard alumni, just did a study of Friends of the Children. For every dollar that's been contributed or provided for you, you get a 6.71 rate of return. So every dollar that you put in, you make money. That's the best dollar a community could ever spend. So I thank you for that. That's what taxpayers want. That's what the community wants. And it makes the community better. Thank you once again.
Thank you. Carolyn? Great.
I'm Carolyn Besick, Executive Director of Oregon Mentors. And I'm going to give you sort of a look at the numbers and some of the data that we've been collecting. Oregon Mentors is the statewide partnership for mentoring programs in Oregon. We currently have just under 100 programs delivering mentoring services in 500 locations. Nationally, Mentor, the National Mentoring Partnership, estimates that about 15 million young people need a mentor. 3 million have one currently nationally. So we're serving about 1 in 5. Two trends. One is that there are many new programs coming to us for services. We fielded 60 interviews with people who wanted to start a mentoring program. Seems a little strange in this economy, but I think it's social service agencies trying to help more people utilizing volunteers and reaching out to the community. The second trend is, in Oregon, we're serving more youth, which is pretty exciting. In 2005, we estimated that 100,000 youth needed a mentor, and at that time, we were serving 18,000. Fast forward 2 years, in 2007, the state was serving 30,000 youth. In our 2009-2010 data, we estimate that actually 200,000 youth need a mentor. It's increased, of course, but we are serving 54,000 youth. So now we're serving 1 in 4. We're making progress. In Portland, about 11,000 youth are being mentored by about 5,000 mentors. A growing body of research proves that mentoring is effective, and it's a great prevention strategy for youth. Mentored youth feel more connected to their parents, their teachers, their peers, and do better at school. They're less likely to drop out, more likely to have concrete plans for what happens after high school. The research is also clear that these positive results only come from high-quality mentoring programs, such as the ones that you fund through the Children's Levy. For young people, it's absolutely essential that the match lasts as long as they anticipate it's supposed to last, whether that's 9 months or a year or 2 years. If it doesn't last that long, then a lot of those positive effects don't actually occur. And that's why we're so proud of the Children's Levy, for emphasizing quality over quantity and for making evaluation and program outcomes a top priority. So on behalf of Oregon Mentors, thank you so much for continuing this good work.
Thank you. Farida.
My name is Farida. I am with Lutheran Community Services Northwest. About a year ago, Portland Children's Levy funded our program called HALO, Helping a Youth Leap Onward. It is a partnership between Lutheran Community Services, SOAR of Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, and Catholic Charities. Together with an AmeriCorps member, we wrote up the grant for HALO. As a result of feedback insights, we were approached by teachers, counselors, case managers, parents who said, are there mentoring programs for our children? And these were parents from specifically the populations we are working with, the Burmese, East African, Eastern European, and Latino populations. So in 2009, thank you, Portland Children's Levy, for making it possible. And one of the challenges that we faced when we first started to outreach into the community is informing the parents what mentoring is. It took about a year. Now we really have referrals from families and teachers. And the key, the hope that we have, apart from providing the tutoring piece, which is a component of the program, is helping these kids to feel connected. I interviewed a kid who is from the house, an immigrant household, a few days ago. And one of the things he said that resonated with a number of the kids is that, I feel I belong here, and yet I don't belong here because there are things I do not know that my parents cannot provide. So having a caring adult who is a mainstream, they are cultural informants, and they help the kids make that leap, that connection, because it's something their parents cannot provide. And parents are just too happy to give their kids to an adult that they can trust, that they know we've done background checks on, that can help them negotiate the complexities of school, of negotiating the social dynamics that are out there. And counselors, the schools that we work with, like David Douglas High School, they are just inundated with so many imperatives. They don't have time for kids like the ones we work with. And so where the adults come in here is to help the kids aspire. They know that the stream will become a river that will flow into the sea, that will not end up in a pond. So we take our middle schoolers and high schoolers to conferences like the Bridges Conferences of OHSU and PSU. They didn't know they could go to college. They thought if they're lucky enough, they finish high school and go to work at McDonald's. Now, that is a bad thing, but they have a right to aspire. So Portland Children's Levy make that possible for us. Our numbers are small, but we figured, based on my experience working with the immigrant populations for the past 10 years, if you can make one person succeed in the family, whether a kid or an adult, that is a glimmer of hope. I can do it too. And I know this because I come from an immigrant household. I'm the first in my family, the first female in my family to complete college and postgraduate school. So thank you, Portland Children's Levy.
Thank you.
I have a question. In fact, I'd like all three of you to answer. If somebody's watching at home and is struck by the statistic you just gave us of only 1 in 4 Portland youth who need a mentor have one, if somebody wants to connect with each of your programs, how would they do that?
Right down the line, they just call Friends of the Children and offer to volunteer or to have a relationship, more incidental. But I'd highly recommend they actually, most of the people call Oregon Mentors, and there'll be a liaison to whether it's Big Brothers, Big Sisters, or Friends of the Children, or other organizations.
So could you give us the phone number and website?
503 517-8990, and our website is OregonMentors.org. And we'll take time on the phone to match, help people figure out what they want, or our website's very informative and has a matching function.
We're part of the Oregon Mentors Network, and to recruit mentors, we have to do ads like Synergy, Craigslist, Volunteer Match, Idealist.org, or we simply speak to instructors, make presentations. And the HALO program, I think, resonates with a lot of people. But one of the challenges we have is that the commitment is at least 6 months. And though when they come in, they have altruistic reasons, I mean, they are really sincere about it. But life is as such that sometimes their commitment to us may have to be secondary because of family commitment. For example, we have mentors that have to be relocated because of job opportunities or family duties, caring for an elder parent. So, but Oregon Mentors have been wonderful in giving us the opportunities to access resources otherwise inconceivable. For example, tickets to a Trailblazer Games.
That's an incentive. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate your work. Any others?
No one invited. I think various people signed up.
But two more people who signed up, Marge Cannon and Patsy Stevens.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us. I'm Marge Cannon, and I'm a senior program manager at Metropolitan Family Service, and I oversee all of the older adult programs, one of which is Experience Corps, which is one of the mentoring programs funded through the Portland Children's Levy. First of all, I'd like to express my appreciation on behalf of our agency, the children that we serve, and our older adult mentors for the leadership and support that Dan Salzman has shown with mentoring and the Portland Children's Levy, and also for all of you, because I know you face many hard choices when it comes to funding programs. Also, it was a privilege for me to sit here and listen to the other mentoring programs, to the individuals that came today. And I have to say, it's such a privilege to be part of the mentoring movement here in Portland. We know that the Portland Children's Levy has limited funding, and we're so grateful that we can be a part of that movement. I'd like to tell you just a brief little bit about our mentoring program and then have one of our mentors speak with you. First of all, I wanted to let you know about Experience Corps. We, as was mentioned earlier, we match older adult retired volunteers with youth in schools that have been identified by their teachers that might benefit for behavioral or academic support. During the last year, 350 students were matched with a mentor, and of those children, about 60% are from varying ethnic and racial groups, such as African American, Native American, various Latino groups, from a wide number of countries, and about 50% of them are English language learners. We have had specific trainings over the past few years regarding these kinds of, helping these kinds of children who are English language learners and coming from a variety of cultures, because our mentors want to feel that they can be as successful and prepared as they can in working with these children. At Prescott Elementary School, one of our schools where we serve, the school principal recently made this comment. Michael Lope said, "It's often difficult to hire a diverse staff with a large pool of white applicants. The mentors show us strong adults who work hard to support learning and in turn provide a diverse group of adults working to support each child." Now I'd like to introduce one of our wonderful mentors, Patsy Stevens. She's been volunteering at Woodlawn School for the last 7 years, contributing about 15 hours a week to working with children. So I'll let Patsy speak. Thank you.
Good morning. It is a pleasure to for you to allow me to represent the Experience Corps Metropolitan Family Services and helping the children. I'm speaking on behalf of myself and for the Experience Corps tutors. We work with our students, and we try very hard and to meet their needs. And we're there to assist them in everything that they need. And we believe in working with all diversity. Overall, working with students is rewarding for them, for helping them, and also for us. We have gotten out of the system. I worked with the school district for over 30 years, and I wasn't planning on coming back, work with the kids, but it's in your blood, and I love working with them. It's rewarding. And also, we help the children to feel good about themselves, to have them to lift up their self-esteem and try to bring them out of their little closed world and let them see the bigger picture of learning new things. And for me, an experienced tutor, I really enjoy the exciting and surprised look on their faces when they finally get it. It's a great feeling and satisfaction just knowing they are breaking through. They are progressing, they are learning in many areas. To be productive and positive individuals in their home, in the school, in the society, we as experienced core tutors are thankful that we had some effective part in their lives. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Anything else?
What's up?
Any discussion from council? Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for both the children's levy and for bringing this report to us. And thank you for each of you who took time to come and talk to us this morning. We recently discussed a gun violence act that the mayor brought forward to try to restrict access of guns to juveniles in particular, but throughout our society. And people at that hearing asked us, why aren't you doing other things to help children? And so this is an example of one of the other things that we're doing to help children. I am struck by the statistic. We're doing better than the nation. If we have 1 in 4 children being provided tutors here and 1 in 5 in the nation, but that still means that 3 out of 4 children don't have the mentor that they need. And as I listen to your presentation, I'm not yet a grandmother, but it sounds like a little bit like the joys of grandmothering versus mothering, whereas you can interact with a child and make a significant difference in their lives, but then you get to go home and do your thing, and the rest of the support staff, the parents, and the teachers continue on. So it is something that, as a parent in public schools, I was very glad to do and will do after I finish my term on the council. And thank you very much for bringing this presentation to us today to give people a chance to know that they too could make a difference in a child's life. We are a society, we are a village, and each person, it can be just 1 hour a week, and that can make a significant difference in that child's life to know that somebody other than the people who are supposed to care about them chose to come and spend some time with them. So thank you very much, and thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. Aye.
Bish?
Thanks to each of you for your presentations, which were very inspiring. It's actually nice to see Duncan Campbell come before us. I see Duncan on TV about 3 times a week because his seats are behind the Trailblazers bench. And they always focus on you and for the reaction shot of what's ever going on. And you're very expressive, so it's nice to have you here in person. Dan is our champion on the Council for Children, and it's an honor to serve with him and to partner with him. And one of the ways that Parks partners with Commissioner Saltzman is with the teen program. And I want to thank my colleagues for, during tough budget cycles, continuing to invest in our summer teen program, which serves lots of kids in our community through our rec centers and provides healthy activities during the summertime. Every child deserves to have a loving, caring adult in their life. And not every child is going to have a parent or a relative who functions in that role, a loving, caring adult, one person who's there in your corner. Each of us who've had the chances to pursue our own dreams have had that person in our corner. Every child deserves to have that person in their corner. So thank you for your outstanding work, and thank you, Dan, for your leadership. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank the Experience Corps volunteers for all the work you do, 15 hours a week at Woodlawn. That's very impressive, so thank you for that. And I want to thank Duncan Campbell, the founder of Friends of the Children, a highly successful mentoring organization, Carolyn Besick of Oregon Mentors. One of the things Oregon Mentors does is establish basically criteria
for successful mentor organizations to aspire to. And it includes things like what kind of a background check needs to occur and all that. And the Children's Levy requires that any program that applies for mentoring dollars must comply with Oregon Mentors quality assurance standards. So Oregon Mentors plays not only a valuable role in promoting mentoring, but providing us that baseline criteria under which we can evaluate. And I want to thank Farida for the good work that Lutheran Family Services Northwest is doing. It's very exciting to hear about your success. So thank you all. And I think we have our work cut out for us. Only 1 in 4 children who need mentors have mentors. So I hope people who are watching today will get in contact with Oregon Mentors or the Children's Levy or Friends of the Children and get involved. There's a lot of kids who need positive adult role models, and you can provide that service. So thank you. Aye.
Leonard?
Programs like this require a champion, and Dan has certainly been the champion on the council, but also before he got here at the county. So I want to acknowledge Dan's leadership and certainly echo everything Commissioner Fish said. He's been great on these issues, and I always appreciate it. And I also very much appreciated Duncan sharing his own personal story. That's very helpful, and I think provides an example for others who grew up like you to at least try to emulate some of what you've done to help kids who aren't as fortunate as you to put in perspective what it took to get where you are. So thank you, everybody, for your presentation. It was really good. Bye.
Adams.
Well, thank you, Dan, for your good work on this, and to all of you for taking our resources and leveraging them to get great results. Appreciate it. Aye. Resolution is approved. Can you please read the title for time certain? Oops, wrong one. Read
the
title.
Do you want to do the consent agenda items that were pulled?
No, we'll make them wait.
Okay.
Can you please read the title for regular agenda item and call the vote, S-78.
Mm-hmm. Accept a grant in the amount of $2,445,563 from the Oregon Department of Transportation and authorize an intergovernmental agreement for the design of the Northeast 102nd Avenue, Northeast Gleason to Southeast Washington, Phase 2. Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. S-78 is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 79?
Amend contract with CMTS, Inc. to add inspector apprenticeship program and increase compensation.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. This is an exciting round two of a program begin at the outset of the Big Pipe Project. Let me provide some background first. The City Sewer Agency, the Bureau of Environmental Services, contracts with CMTS to provide construction inspection services for sewer projects. CMTS and Environmental Services worked together from 2002 through 2004 on a successful program to train minority applicants as construction inspectors. Environmental Services suspended the program after 2004 to focus its energies towards completing the combined sewer overflow projects and before the mandated December 2011 deadline. So also because of the specialized nature of much of the CSO construction, such as tunneling, we felt that our trainees wouldn't have as many opportunities to gain experience on our more traditional construction projects. Now that the big pipe work is winding down, I've asked Environmental Services to resume a training and apprenticeship program with the goal of training and graduating 2 candidates each year. The city's goal is to increase diversity in our workforce and our contracting with diverse firms. So this ordinance will help us increase diversity among our public works inspectors. The program will require a $300,000 increase in the amount of the city's contract with CMTS. This is an emergency ordinance because the program is scheduled to begin on January 21st. Environmental Services Program Manager Sue Williams is here and can provide more details. Yvonne McLean, who represents CMTS, will provide additional information about their role in this recruitment. So why don't you both come on up and
So we'll let Yvonne describe in more detail.
Good morning. I'm Sue Williams, and I'm Business Operations Manager for the Engineering Group for BES. And as Commissioner Saltzman said, we've kind of dusted off and updated the Inspector Apprenticeship Program that we ran in the early 2000. And we're ready to start January 31st, next week after next. These are paid apprenticeship programs. The apprentices will be employed by CMTS, and Yvonne will talk in a minute a little bit about their employment. BES will contribute by paying the billing rate per our contract for both time spent in the classroom for the trainees as well as on the job training that will be provided. And BES, along with CMTS, will participate in the training. Our inspectors and our inspection manager will mentor these individuals on the job site. And we anticipate that after a few months of training that these individuals will actually be able to assist with construction inspection on our job site. So they'll be actively assisting with our inspection program. After graduation, they may be employed by CMTS and work on City of Portland jobs or other agencies. They could end up competing on civil service through the civil service process and get a city position. At this partnership really provides the opportunity for both BES and CMTS to share in cost, training, and then it gives the candidates both the public sector and private sector work experience. So I'm going to let Yvonne tell you a little bit about what their role is going to be and what employment through CMTS means.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Yvonne McLean. I'm the president of CMTS, and we have been working with Commissioner Dan Saltzman and Sue Williams in the Bureau of Environmental Services for several years, providing contract, basically professional services to help augment the city staff during your peak construction season to help with your CIP program. And you know, we were approached this year to help collaborate and work together again, which I was really excited about, to work with the city, to work with the various community, to help them have an opportunity to work with the city and work with city inspectors to potentially do a inspector's trainings program. And it's kind of similar to like an apprenticeship program with a contractor. However, the difference is it is a paid position. We get all the benefits of all of our existing employees that currently work for us. And it gives them a hands-on, on-the-job training experience, which a lot of apprenticeship programs, the traditional construction apprenticeship programs, generally are not paid positions. And they have a mentor, but we're really there to really help the individuals succeed in this particular program. In terms of benefits that we have, I do pay 100% of the employees' medical benefits. We pay a portion of their dental, a portion of their vision. They get 80 hours of paid vacation. They'll get a week's work of sick vacation as well, too. The program, it's a year program that we're looking at, and after 90 days, we will do a kind of a 30, 60, 90-day evaluation, and based on their performance, we will probably get a pay increase as well within the 90 days. So it's very competitive within the working world of anybody coming into a new program as an apprentice, and we're actually recruiting out in the community. I spoke with various consultants that we've worked with in the past. I've contacted Southeast Workforce, Oregon Tradeswomen. I did contact the Confederate Tribes of Grand Ronde, and also worked with the U.S. Forest Service Department. They have a huge mentoring program within their organization. And we were kind of looking for individuals who have a construction background, who's kind of interested in how do you become a public works inspector? That's kind of a mystery. You know, there's no degree that you can get in public works inspection. So this is kind of a wonderful opportunity for us to work together to outreach to the community.
Are you a for-profit or nonprofit?
We are a for-profit organization.
And where are you headquartered?
3220 Southwest First Avenue.
So you're headquartered in Portland?
Mm-hmm.
It's a national company or local company?
We have offices in various different states, but the Oregon office is its own separate entity. It has its own tax ID number.
And how many offices do you have around the country?
We have six.
And where is the headquarters for the...
Again, we don't have a headquarters. Like the Oregon office is organized, and I run the Oregon operation here. and like I said, it's a separate tax ID. We're our own separate business line. You know, like a larger engineering firms, they have various business lines, and they may have a
typical. So you own this company?
Yes, I'm a part owner of the organization.
Huh. Mm-hmm. I guess I wonder why we've got a number of nonprofits that do this kind of work, and I'm just wondering why we're not looking to them, with all due respect, why we're not looking to them, and they're struggling. There are a number of firms, a number of nonprofits. You mentioned Southeast Works and others that are, I know their budgets are pretty desperate.
Well, I think that part of the reason is the unique aspects of public works inspectors and getting people immersed in that particular skill set. I think we, and chime in or Sue or Yvonne, but I think we rely on those organizations to provide us the candidates. But CMTS, through its specialized relationship with Bureau of Environmental Services over the years, provides the actual inspector jobs. So these people are going into jobs. They're being employed by CMTS directly.
Right. Also, in addition, we also have inspectors that are working. So they're a great mentor for them to succeed. So we can partner. We're going to pair them up with another one of our inspectors so that they know what to expect out in the job. And if they have any questions besides working with a city inspector, they also have a CMTS inspector as well. So in a way, they have two mentors working with them, a city's perspective as well as a consultant's perspective to work on these particular programs. So it's really an on-the-job, you know, they're out in the field, they're going to be working with them on a day-to-day basis. Right. Kind of a partnership relationship.
And we also rely on CMTS provides probably at least 50% of the training so that the burden of training doesn't fall completely on the city. So it's really a share. So I don't know, these other agencies probably wouldn't have the capacity.
So how long have you had the training? How long have you been contracting with BES?
We've been with BES since about 2000.
2002.
We started with the training program in 2002, and then we stopped in 2004.
And again, I have to ask due diligence questions. It's not about you or your. I'm trying to figure this out because I sit in other meetings where I've got nonprofit organizations and colleges and, you know, educational institutions that are struggling financially. So I'm trying to fit all the pieces together. So forgive me for the questions. I don't mean them to sound ungrateful or impertinent. So you work with our nonprofits to source candidates, and then you train them, and some is on the job at BES, and then some is on other jobs?
Well, this particular position is only two positions. So I've kind of outreached to the various communities, say, hey, you know, do you have any good candidates that you think would be interested in public works inspection? And they've given us names of individuals, and we're going to, you know, I've talked to each of them to see if this is a program that they'd be interested in, kind of give them a little history of how extensive it would be in terms of, you know, working out in the field and working out in the rain, and as well as a lot of classroom training and homework that they'll be taking home as well, too.
So is the $300,000, that includes their salary?
Yes, salary and paying.
The way that the $300,000 actually we're figuring it's going to be about $150,000 a year for two individuals, but in case we do, if this is successful, we may do it again next year. We have billing rates in the contract, just like we pay for the contract inspectors that we hire. We'll be paying a billing rate to CMTS. The individuals are actually employed by CMTS, so they'll receive their paycheck.
But even if it's for 2 years, that's still $75,000 per employee per year. So what do we get for that? Versus if we sponsored apprenticeships at community college or elsewhere?
Well, because we're really doing an intensive, really intensive program, you will have an individual who will probably be able to, one, apply for a city position and really have a good knowledge of it. They'll be able to apply for any contractor that's doing any kind of infrastructure work to come in as an individual who actually has experience, working experience, versus kind of a candidate who just graduated from school and really starts, that doesn't have any work experience at all. So you're kind of accelerating their educational process by doing this program. So really the city is investing in that individual, and we're really looking at candidates
who know the general endeavor.
Right. But their candidate is not getting $75,000 a year. So what are we paying for in
when
addition
you pay,
to
that? Well, you're paying for insurance and health insurance and workman's comp insurance. We're paying for the medical benefits. We're paying for their normal employee health package. I'm paying instructors to come and teach slope calculations and OSHA training and any HAZWOPR training, 10-hour safety training. So I'm paying individuals to come in and teach the classes as well, too.
So can you tell me the breakdown with how much is the cost of the employee pay and benefits and how much is the training?
The employee is going to probably start around $15.60 an hour. And after 90 days, we'll give them a $2 increase in
salary. So the annual cost, including benefits, for the employee is?
Oh, gosh. Well, our bill rate is 34. I didn't break it down. I'm sorry, I didn't bring that.
$34.50. To understand is how much it costs for the particular apprentice and how much is the overhead costs, which might be better spent in a broader program with more people.
Well, generally, our overhead costs for the majority of, if we are like currently right now with our city inspectors, is a 2.1 multiplier on top of the person's salary. That includes all insurance, workman's comp, health insurance, which is fairly low. Most consultants are more in the 3.0 multiplier range, and we're very low.
I think that
a 2.1 multiplier is pretty standard throughout the consulting world.
I guess if I could interpret your question, so it's really not to you because you have your overhead and you have what you've been able to charge and the Bureau is willing to pay for it. I understand that. So my question is to you. It sounds like a long 11-year relationship with the firm, and that obviously must be based on the fact that it produces the results that you're paying for. When was the last time you bid out this kind of work, and have you looked at existing, to follow up on Commissioner Fritz's question, existing programs at community colleges and nonprofits that might be able to do more than two individuals for $150,000?
Well, we and I have been working with Reese in your office. I'm actually the person in BES on the Future Connect program, so I'm pretty familiar with that whole scholarship effort.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the existing providers.
Right. As Yvonne was kind of alluding to, public works inspection is not necessarily a curriculum that you can enroll in that I'm aware of at community colleges. Most of our inspectors, both city and contract, come out of the construction industry. And so what we provide is a very specialized, this is how to interpret City of Portland specifications, this is how City of Portland inspection works.
I apologize for the interruption, but for 70, I just want to know, I've got to do the due diligence. We're working hard to put together $250,000 to serve hundreds of potential, to provide both hundreds of scholarships, trying to get the match, in the private sector as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, $75,000 could fund a teacher at PCC that could tailor a class to meet your needs and serve 30 people. I mean, that's kind of what we are so short of money. The federal government is cutting back at WSI, which I'm on the board of, and $150,000, would fund a lot of instruction. And PCC exists and Mount Hood College exists to create curriculum to meet the needs of specific employers. Have you looked at that?
We did not look for this inspection program. And we have done a similar inspection program years ago where we had city positions that we hired trainees. But then the burden of all the training fell on city staff who are out there doing work. And so this relationship that we started with contractors, and we did it one before CMTS, we did it one time with another firm, just because the partnering works, and then these individuals are able to work and perform some inspection on the job for us.
So. I had asked Sue and Yvonne to bring this program back. Mm-hmm. As I said, we did have this once before, and it was very successful in getting people into some city inspection jobs, permanent. It wasn't totally successful, but it was pretty successful. And I felt that based on the that track record, the screaming need for more minorities and women in these fields, that I wanted them to resume the program that had worked in the past.
What was the track record? And then Commissioner Fisher.
I think there was a class of...
Commissioner, after you answer your question, I interrupted Commissioner Fritz and then Commissioner Fisher. They were what?
I think the original...
There was a class of four.
Four and
three graduate from the program, and two are actually have applied. They were CMT's employees for about 2 or 3 years, and two are now actual city employees. And just recently, last year, our star candidate, Veronica Ferguson, she has now applied for a senior position as a public works inspector, and she's now a senior inspector.
And then I'll turn it to you, I promise. And the race of these folks?
The two individuals that are city employees are African-American, and the third candidate that graduated was also African-American.
Sorry, Commissioner Fritz, I apologize.
It's okay, thank you. And I want to acknowledge that BES has done a splendid job and has consistently, as contracts come through, been exceeding many of the minority and women's emerging small businesses targets that we've set, so, and that you're certainly part of that, and I appreciate that. As the mayor said, we're doing due diligence on this particular contract. Mm-hmm. And so one further question I have is that the new not-to-exceed contract amount is $17,300,000. What has the rest of the contract been spent for? And do we have a report on, you know, the success of the whole contract?
Yeah, this is a contract that BES uses to provide basically overflow inspection services, construction managers and technicians for our CIP projects. And because we've been involved in the CSO program, we've had a lot of peaks in our construction workload, and so we've historically used contract employees through these contracts, and they assist on the job site.
So that includes the actual construction as well as
that's
the
all not cost of construction, but construction management and inspection personnel that we've used. And we're in the fourth year of the contract. Mm-hmm. And it potentially can go until, we wanted to carry it until the CSO program ended, so the contract itself expires in December of 2012.
Thank you for that question. So the contract with CMTS is not for $17 million, is it?
The contract with CMTS?
Is the contract with
yes.
It is for $17 million?
Yeah, over the course of 5 years.
Past or forward?
We're in the fourth year.
And that contract must have been bidded out.
Absolutely. I mean, that was, we went through an RFP process.
Yeah, and I think we currently are at 22% for minority firms.
I think I calculated closer to 26%.
We're at 26%. I have six sub-consultants on the contract.
Yeah, when we say we've contracted with them for years, it's always been through, they've been the successful proposer and through an RFP process.
Yeah. Okay. Commissioner Fish?
I have to say, I find the discussion is very interesting, and it prompts me to ask a number of other questions, Mayor. One of my other roles is I'm leading the city's effort on the disparity study. So we are a month or two away from having some findings, which we'll bring to council and have a broader discussion about how we're hitting our mark in MWESB generally. But I know so little about this approach. And I have so many questions. I just wonder, is it necessary for us to take this up as an emergency ordinance today, or is this something where we could set it over for next week and just have some further discussion? Because I don't want to burden the record with just free-flow questions, but I sincerely would like to know more about it and understand why we take this approach and not some other approaches.
Can do that.
We can do that.
We can set it over a week.
Yeah, we
want to get the program going at the end of the month.
We wanted to get it rolling because it works very well calendar year-wise for us to start the training. But if there are questions, certainly we can hold it over.
Would you accept a friendly amendment to remove the emergency clause and just set this over for next week?
Sure.
Well, an emergency clause would actually delay the implementation even if you voted on it next week. So I would
just move it over.
I would suggest we just set it over.
Set the matter over.
So
I'm fine with that.
We'll set the matter over unless there are objections. We will take testimony if there is any testimony. Does any additional discussion while we're here? Okay, anyone wish to testify on item number 79? Okay, it's moved to a second hearing next week. It's moved to next week's council calendar agenda. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance, item number 80?
amend contract with Analytical Services, Inc. to increase compensation for laboratory services for cryptosporidium analysis.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
David Schaff, Director of the Water Bureau.
Good morning. I'm David Schaff. I'm the Director of the Portland Water Bureau. In